My name is Manfred Hellriegel. I'm from Austria, the most western part of Austria, and I'm working for the Office for Future-Related Issues. And today I'm going to talk about self-organization and how to win people to be engaged for the community and the Commonwealth. I'm a bit trembling because I have to talk in English, and this is not my mother language, so hopefully you can understand me despite my heavy accent, but Scots also have a heavy accent, so maybe that's something we have in common. Today I will talk about from consumers to citizens, and actually, I don't want to give a classical presentation. I would like to tell you some stories about our work and especially how our work developed over the years, because what you will see is not something we knew in the beginning, but it's just an ongoing learning process. And this is what I want to put an emphasis on. I have three parts of what I want to talk about. First, I will talk about the region I'm coming from, Vorarlberg, and OFRI, the abbreviated form of Office for Future-Related Issues, or Büro für Zukunftsfragen. I will talk about the challenges or the future questions we are working on, how we perceive the world and what are the big issues we have to cope with. And then I will talk about what we have learned during the last 20 years. And hopefully it's an interesting afternoon, and you don't regret to have come here. So let's start with where is Vorarlberg? Interestingly, all maps that are shown show yourself in the middle. That's the same with me. Vorarlberg is in the most western part of Austria. Just we have borders to Germany, to Switzerland, and it's a tiny region. And as you can see, most of our area is covered with relative high mountains. So only a very small part of our country is able to build houses and stuff like that. And we share a part of the Lake Constance. That's also, it's a wonderful area. Some of you may know it from tourism, from going skiing or summer holidays. So it's a very popular region for recreation. And we don't have one single big town. We have a row of small towns, but altogether in this area, I would say 250,000 people are living, and altogether in Vorarlberg we have 370,000 inhabitants. A speciality I was not aware of until Colin visited us is that we have 96 municipalities, and each municipality has a mayor, and they get salaries, not big salaries, but they are paid for what they are doing, and they have a small staff to take care of the public affairs. So if we would have Scottish circumstances, we would have two mayors or two municipalities. So this is something I was not aware of that until you visited us. The Office for Future-Related Issues was founded 12 years ago. And the interesting thing is that despite many other similar organizations that usually are located in the environmental sector, we are working directly for the governor. So this is, for me, a very important precondition to do sustainability work. So you're not limited to the environmental sector, but you can do your work also in the economic or social area. We work on three main issues, and this is about civil engagement. We promote civil engagement, we promote social capital, and the third is sustainable development. And our office is made up of 7 to 8 people with very different qualifications. And we have a budget per year of around 1.5 1.4 million euros, which is quite an amount for such a small region and to working in such a field. These are the guys that are currently working there. I promised to start with the challenges, and usually what probably will come to your mind is climate change and problems like this, but the most important challenge we are facing today is that government is running out of money. And so the big question is, how can we fulfill our role in the coming years when there is less and less money available? And this is something that's true not just for our region, maybe also for others. And the fact that's lying behind this is that we are living far beyond our means. And this is something that has not come to our attention yet. Actually, this is nothing new. We know that we are living beyond our means. We are living far beyond our means since, we know this since 40 years. When the Club of Rome report was published. But the interesting thing is that we tend to neglect this truth. And it's sometimes I'm working in the environmental sector. I started working in the 80s, and to me it seems that still the ship is on the same route and nothing is really changing. An interesting picture of recent days that fits very well to this Titanic picture is the picture we could see recently about the Costa Cordalis in the Mediterranean Sea. And this is for me something like a metaphor that what is happening, and you see those two guys in the water, and they look at each other, and somehow they are wondering how this could happen. And actually, this is a picture of a climate conference. And here you see politicians between fainting away, sleeping, and despair. And this is for me also a wonderful metaphor about the current political situation we're in. And I'm always talking about Vorarlberg, I'm not talking about Scotland, I don't know about your situation. So just see this as a report from a country far away. For me, an interesting question is coming up because it seems that the political system is not able to cope with such wicked problems. But who is going to cope with them if not the government is doing it? And interesting is also the question, how did it come that we are in a situation where politicians don't find solutions? And I think part of the reason is that politics are in a dilemma situation, because if governments are doing what is necessary for sustainable development, those politicians will probably not be elected anymore. And I'm saying this from a position where I'm working for a government. This is not not an NGO point of view. But if government is not capable of doing what is necessary for sustainable development, when they do something else, it's not sustainable. So they are trapped in a dilemma. And this is really a very important question. How comes that the political system is not able to cope with current issues anymore? And I have one simple answer to this difficult question. And the answer is that the problem is that governments treat people not like citizens, they treat them like customers. And they are proud of treating citizens like customers. And it's something like an economical ethics that we seem it's necessary to prevent every bad news from, we don't tell them to the citizens. and we hope to serve them very well. We hope to be re-elected by them, but the result is that citizens behave like customers. They are just demanding, and they don't understand why some problems are difficult to solve. And a few years ago, I came across a very interesting chart. This is from a German political scientist, and he made a very simplified version of the political system. And you see there are politicians, economy, expert, and citizenry. And actually, citizens are not really needed for the political system. It is enough if citizens go to elections every 4 or 5 years, and for the rest of the time, you don't need citizens. The system is working very well here, and citizens are not needed, or seem to be not needed. And we can see the results of such a situation. Another problem is that within the political parties, there is just competition. A few years ago, a mayor visited me, and he was really frustrated after working 30 years as a mayor, because he said most of my energy was spent for the fight between the political parties, and it was not that the parties work together for the best possible solutions. And another problem we have is that not only in the political field, but also in the field of public administration, everything is happening in silos. This means that we have different departments for every agenda, and they are hermetically closed. So, and the real issues we have to cope with don't take care about how we structure the administration. They are cross-departmental issues, and we are not prepared within the administration to work with these difficult problems. And it's obvious that this system is very vulnerable to lobbyism. There are certain groups who have a huge influence, and it's not a secret that many laws are written by lobbyists and just approved in the parliaments. So the situation we are facing is that certain interest groups have a huge influence on politics, whereas other groups have almost no influence and no impact. And the question we are facing is, how can we keep a society together when the centrifugal forces are becoming more and more powerful? And what is it that we share in our diversity? What is it that we have in common? Because more and more things are separating us. And so the big challenge, the big question we are working with is, how can we find good solutions in this labyrinth of opportunities, possibilities, and how can we make successful decisions? And my thesis is that we need a huge shift in our political culture. We need a shift to treat citizens as citizens and not as consumers. And I don't know if you can read it, but I brought a chart from a survey, from a recent survey that was done on European level, and it was about volunteering. And fortunately, United Kingdom is together with Austria and Sweden and Netherlands on the top rank. So this means more than 40% of the population is engaged, is working, are volunteering for public purposes. And interestingly, if you look at those countries in Europe who have very low volunteer rates, like Italy, Greece, Spain, these are also the countries that have huge economical problems. So there is a sort of a connection, a correlation between countries where the public engagement is low, and countries are better off if the public engagement is high. So I draw the conclusion, what we need is that we need more active, engaged citizens that take over responsibility. But the big question is, how can we get them? And this is where I want to start to tell you our story, because this is where we started 20 years ago. And what I can say is that the usual approach we are used to, this means to make laws and regulations, pleas and calls, campaigns, subsidies, awards, this is not really working. Before the Office for Future-Related Issues was founded, we started in the early 90s with an institution that was called Environmental Information Service. And what we did is we did certain campaigns to promote, for example, the bicycle use in society. And despite the fact that Vorarlberg is famous until today that many people use bicycles, what we discovered is that these campaigns lose their power, their strength, very quickly. After 2 or 3 years, most people are not interested anymore in these slogans. So what we did was, after a couple of years, that we started to take a closer look at these campaigns. And we discovered that not everything was bad. Some elements were working really well. So we took a deeper look into these elements. And what we found was really interesting. And what I want to introduce to you is a guy called Oswald Hagen. Oswald Hagen was at that time working for a textile company, some may know it, Wolfort, located in Vorarlberg. At that time they had 1,400 employees. And he came to us and said he wants to participate in our campaign and he wants to make his enterprise he wants to promote the use of bicycles and public transport and so on. And we didn't take him very seriously, to be honest. He was very enthusiastic, but he was not in a very powerful position. He didn't have much money. But the astonishing thing that happened was that within a couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years, he had a huge impact in his company. And they received several national and international awards because at around 40% of the employees started to go every day by foot or with a bicycle or with public transport to their job. And the interesting thing is that Oswald did not anything of what we wanted him to do. So this was astonishing for us. And instead of doing what we proposed, he had his own ideas, and he just used our campaign as an excuse to do what he really wanted to do. And he was very creative, for example, because he had no money. He had a friend who was in the procurement department, and they sent letters to all the companies that were delivering goods to Wolfert, and they said, please don't send us any Christmas presents anymore. What we need are some gifts because we want to make an award. It was a sort of a lottery. They asked their employees, please tell us what we should change. What are the obstacles for you to come to work with the bus, for example? Or what are the obstacles that you don't use the bicycle? And in the end, they had more prizes than they had employees. So this was a huge success. And what Oswald then started was inviting city planners, public transport planners into the company. And he could show them different ideas what they could improve, and they, what we did not expect, they were very grateful, because otherwise they had to figure it out themselves. So they had a complete list of what could be improved, and this had a huge impact again on the employees, because they realized they were taken seriously. And so a huge change started, and what we learned, two things we learned from this Oswald Hagen example was, the first thing is you don't have to convince 1,400 people. What you need is you have to find the Oswald Hagens. This means you have, the Oswald is something like an acupuncture point, and there are acupuncture points, and we have to detect them, in the communities, in the associations, in the companies, in the neighborhoods. We need to find the Oswald Hagens. They are waiting to get the permission to do what they want to do. But this was only the first part of the lesson. The more important thing is that the question we asked ourselves is, what is actually driving people like Oswald? And we discovered it's not, as I said before, it's not that they are doing what we tell them to do. They are working self-organized. They are not fulfilling something that they are told, but they are working on their own mission. And this is how we discovered the miracle or the magic of self-organization. And to explain self-organization, and this is really important, I will explain the opposite of self-organization. And you see here the metaphor of a roundabout. The opposite is a traffic light. The traffic light is telling you what to do when you come to a crossing. So if it's red, you have to stop, no matter if there is anybody around or not. But this is not a very efficient way to steer society and or even traffic. And therefore, everywhere you see roundabouts popping up, they are much more efficient than traffic lights. Here, nobody tells you what to do. You decide yourself in the minute you are at the roundabout what is necessary to be done. You make the decision but the interesting thing, the paradox is that self-organization has to be organized. Because if there is no roundabout, self-organization will take place not so easily. So the question is how to organize self-organization and what could this mean for our work? So what we learned, I want to sum it up again because it's really important. What we learned is, you cannot tell people what to do. That people don't want to be told what to do. But on the other hand, we need a change. We need a shift. What we discovered is people know themselves what to do. Just let them do it. Encourage them. And since 15 years, we are trying to find out the limits of self-organization. We try to find out where you cannot apply self-organization. So what we started is that we stopped talking about sustainable development, because we discovered nobody in Austria, nobody understands what it is all about. It's a sort of a philosophical concept that's very appealing and it's logical, but people don't understand it. So we switched, and what we started to talk is the quality of life. Everybody is interested to secure and improve quality of life. But what is quality of life? We don't know. So what we started was a new type of campaign where we just said, let's promote quality of life, whatever this could mean. And the first mayor that showed up was this guy, Peter Nussbaumer from Langeneck. And at that time, he was a very frustrated mayor. He was really engaged. He had lots of great ideas how to improve his small community. And he was the mayor of a really small absolutely unimportant rural community with 1,000 people. So just 1,000 people. If you, for example, if you wanted to start a business, every professional guy would tell you, don't do that, it's just too small, you can't do business there. But he, what he felt is everything was on his shoulders, it didn't work, people didn't support him, citizens were not actively engaged, despite his great ideas. So he asked us what to do, and we said, well, we have no idea what you should do, but maybe you are the problem. Maybe you should relax a bit and let the citizen do the work that is necessary to be done. He was reluctant, but he accepted to give it a try. So the next step after talking with him, we implemented something that is like a snowball effect. We asked him to select 15 people out of his community, randomly selected. So this is very important. You will hear it over and over again. Randomly selected citizens. And we invited them for a gathering. And we told them nobody is interested in the life quality of Langeneck. Nobody. Not in Bregenz, not in Vienna, not in Brussels, nobody. So if you want to improve life quality, when, if you want to secure it, you have to do it on your own. We will support you, and we have no ideas what you will do. It doesn't matter. It's okay if you do it in energy or public transport, whatever. We are not interested in the issue. We will just support you. Could you imagine to engage yourself to promote life quality in your community? And they said, yes, we can. And then they asked, what is the next step? And we said, we will meet again in 2 weeks, and each one of you will bring 3 more people. So we had a gathering of 45 people, and again we talked about life quality and how to improve it. But this time the task they had to fulfill was that they should make a list. And now it's very important. Not usually the lists they made was what they were missing, their needs, their deficits. But we encourage them, don't list the deficits. We are not interested in your needs or deficits. We want to know what your gifts are, your talents. Who are the people in your community that are already contributing to life quality in Langeneck? And now something really astonishing happened. Nobody had expected. They ended up with a list of 200 people in such a small community. And this was a surprise. The first time they detected the gift they already had. And the next idea that came up was to make a big party, a big event in the community, together with those 200 people, and to celebrate and to start a project to promote life quality within their community. And this was in 1997. After 1 year, we left them, we didn't help them anymore, and they are still working. And now it's becoming visible what started then. And here you have a list, and maybe you want to compare it to another community you know. What has happened is a new grocer's shop opened in passive house quality. In most or in many other communities, the shops closed down. A physician came and settled down, a dentist came, a masseur, a barber. They still have a post office that is now run by disabled people. In many other communities, they had to close down the post offices. The pub did not close but was enlarged to a hotel. The dairy was not closed down, but was renovated, a car dealer, carpenter, cafe. So this shows that the village has become alive. This is not the result of subsidies. This is not the result of state programs. This is the result of citizens who stand up and take care and responsibility for their living area. And again, usually you would say 1,000 people in a rural community, what can they do? And here you see a list of, they have won since then more than 25 national and international awards. And this is also an important part because the Langeneckers could not believe their success until people outside of Langeneck recognized what they were doing. This is also something really interesting, that therefore awards and public recognition plays an important role. The latest achievement was that they won the European Town Renewal Award. This is one of the most prestigious awards in Europe for community and regional development. So in a similar way, we supported another valley, because at that time we thought, yeah, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe. Yeah. So we did the same thing in other areas, like the Great Walser Valley. It's also a deprived area. Even many people in Vorarlberg don't know where this valley is. And they were certified as a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. And also they also won dozens of awards and prizes, and also the European Town Renewal Award. So this shows that this is not just a single event. Meanwhile, we had the year 2004, and the governor discovered the importance of being more child-friendly in our region. And he asked us to make a proposal about a strategy how Vorarlberg could become the most child-friendly region in the world. And what would you do if you get such a demand? Usually what other offices would do is you set up a group of experts, and the experts work out a strategy paper that costs a lot of money. Then you have a thick strategy paper and nobody dares what is written in it. So to avoid this mistake, and because of our experiences with Langeneck and other municipalities, we asked ourselves, maybe we should ask the citizens to work out such a paper. And at that time we came across a method that's called Planungszelle. It's citizens' jury, I guess, is the English name for it. And we suggested it to the governor, and the governor agreed. And this is an important thing. Meanwhile, he had trust in the work we did. So he said, okay, let's give it a try. And what we started is we invited 2,000 people, randomly selected. 2,000 people randomly selected received an invitation letter. Please take off 4 days and work for the government. You don't get paid, but you can make a proposal how to make our country more child-friendly. And 75 responded and said, okay, we're going to do that. And because it's about child-friendliness, we said we don't just need adults, we also need children. So we organized future conferences with 50 children. And to be honest, we were a bit scared, because when you work for the governor, you cannot make mistakes. So we thought, okay, if it fails, what are we doing? So we decided last minute to organize an open space conference with 60 experts. So if it fails, we have the experts and we are safe. Afterwards, it turned out that this was a really great idea to make three simultaneous processes, because now we could compare the results. And it turned out that what the children and the citizens worked out was at least as good as what came from the experts. But there was one big difference. For the government, it's much easier to put this into practice, what is coming from the citizens, than what is coming from the experts. So they worked out a paper, a citizen's advice for the child friendliness. This was really well recognized, and the government agreed to make each year a report of what they made out of the advice of the citizens. And this was the start of a program that is called Children into the Middle. So this sounds like a good story, but it was not really. The problem with the citizens' jury was it was too costly. We spent 200,000 euros for this citizens' advice. And the Vorarlberg people have the reputation that they don't spend money easily. So we were looking for an alternative way to do something with the same quality but cheaper and quicker, and we were looking and we found something, and this is what I really want to tell you this afternoon. It's about wisdom councils. Wisdom councils is a method that was developed in the United States by Jim Ruff, and to be honest, it's primarily used in Vorarlberg, but meanwhile it's spreading also into Germany and other parts of Austria. And I would like to tell you how it works, because it's very simple, and it's a wonderful approach. We work not with dozens of people. We work just with 12 to 16 people, and the idea is that they represent something like the microcosm out of a community. And it doesn't matter if you work, you can do it in a community, you can do it in a city, you can do it statewide. So the important thing is, again, that we work with randomly selected people. And this is the third time that you hear this. We work with randomly selected people because we don't want to have the usual suspects, those who always, they're always the same people that show up. And we want to avoid the typical stakeholders. And the result is that with the random selection, we know from many studies that approximately one third of the population, which is not already engaged, they are just waiting to be asked. But you cannot do that if you make an announcement, but you have to turn to them personally. And so they get an invitation letter and we call them up on the phone and to win them. And we don't gather them for 4 days, but just for 1.5 days, on Friday afternoon and Saturday. And all the pictures you see are from real wisdom councils that were done in Vorarlberg. And there are two different versions. The classic wisdom council is that you do not set a topic. The citizens decide themselves what is really important for them, what they want to talk about. We discovered that for politicians this is sometimes tricky. And so the killer application of wisdom council is the so-called creative insight council. When we have a political issue, we give to the citizens. So this is a second possibility. The important thing now is you have 12 or 16 randomly selected citizens, and their job is that they come to an unanimous statement on Saturday evening. So this means they have to discuss, they have to listen to each other. And what we discovered, this is something that is missing in our 2 days political culture. What we have is competition. We have surveys, for example, or polls, but it's only black and white. It's nothing in between. You have no opportunity as a citizen to make up your mind. And usually you're living in your field of where you don't meet other-minded people with other opinions. So this is a wonderful opportunity to get in touch with different people you don't know yet, with people of different age groups, of different migrant background, different economic groups. And here you can really talk to each other. And the interesting thing is it always worked. They concluded those 1.5 days with a unanimous statement. And important is the facilitation method. There is a certain facilitation method. I don't have the time to go deeper into it, but maybe you want to Google it. That's dynamic facilitation. And then after the Wisdom Council, the citizens present their outcome, their statement publicly. And then not just only present it, but they also offer it for a public discussion. Here you see, it's for me it's difficult to put everything into 45 minutes, so we discovered that a cinema-style setting like you have here is not very beneficial for a good conversation. It's good for a presentation, but if you want to have a good discussion, we prefer the World Cafe style, because some people don't want to stand up in front of a big audience and say something. And we have to take this also into account. So this is a bit, this was a bit theoretically about the Wisdom Council. I want to show you a practical example, how it works. You can get a better idea out of that. And it's about the waterfront project in Bregenz. At that time, Bregenz just tried to develop the harbor area. And what they did is, they knew already that public participation is important. So they did a public participation project. They spent 200,000 euros. But the problem was that the whole thing did not turn out as they hoped. Actually, it was the conflict between the different views was fueled. And they didn't come up with a unanimous statement or with a generally approved solution. So the division within the community grew despite the fact they did public participation. And this was the reason why we approached the mayor and said, please, if you ever want to do a project like this again, we would offer to counsel you for free. And he said, oh, I have a project. And here you see a view from above of Bregenz of the. Here you see it's the Lake of Constance, and there is a famous venue here in summer. They have concerts and stuff like that. And here is the center of the city. And if you take a closer look, then you can see here in this area, and this is the most expensive space in Bregenz. What we have here is parking lots since 30 years, because the local government could not decide how to use this precious space. For decades, they talked about it, but didn't find a solution. And finally, investors bought this whole area. And started with a development project in the worth of 100 million euros. So you can imagine that for the city, this was an important project, and they asked us what to do to secure the public support of the development project. And we said, we don't really know, but maybe we should do a Wisdom Council for that. And the planners were not really excited about that idea. They were already working since 2 years on a master plan, but the fortunate thing was that they had not finalized the master plan yet. So we organized a Wisdom Council. And the interesting thing that happened now is, you know, the planners had doubts. Can you use ordinary citizens who have no idea of architecture, planning, stuff like that, to take a look at such a project? Can that work out well? Their concerns was they would talk about the color and the height of the buildings and how many windows and stuff like that. But the interesting thing that happened is that the citizens took a look at the plans, and after 30 minutes, they said, not bad. But you have overseen a very important thing. And the thing you have overseen is the following. if you look at the geography of this project, what you can see is that the city is divided from the waterfront by the train and by the street. And this is since more than 100 years. And now we have this, the chance of a century to overcome this barrier. We need a bridge so that people easily can pass over to the waterfront. And the planner said, we are not stupid, we thought about that. Now I don't have the word for it. They said, we have planned an underpass so to connect the two parts. And the citizen said, no, we don't want the underpass. What we want is something like Spanish stairs. We want something on the surface that is bridging the tracks. And this should be so attractive. This could be something that is unique for Bregenz, and a place where you can sit in the evening to watch the sunset, a place where you can put your bicycle through and your children cart. Your Pam. So the planners and the politicians and the investors looked at each other, and while they were thinking what this could mean, the citizens, we couldn't stop the citizens anymore. They started to build models, and they started to make press conferences. They were so excited, and the interesting thing is they were not against something, they were for something, in favor of this solution. And finally, the politicians agreed and said, yes, this is a great idea, and this is a photography and a virtual picture of what should start being built end of this year. And this is, for me, a wonderful symbol what citizens can do and what they can't. They are not architects, that's right. They are not experts, they are not planners. But they are experts for the daily life. They know what is really needed in their community. And they have an expertise they can bring into planning processes. And if you do it right, it helps the community to be together and not to be divided. And therefore, such approaches are very important. And that's why I'm so in favor of public participation and self-organization. So let's come to some conclusions. So I started telling you about the huge challenges we are facing as a society and how important it is that we secure our capability to act despite the fact that we are getting more and more diverse in our community. And if you have slept until here, I would love if you just give me your attention for one more minute, because in the next slide I put the whole thing together, or tried to put it together. We often are working on problems, try to find solutions. And if you can do that, do it. But more and more we encounter situations where it's not possible to find solutions, or at least it's not possible to realize the solutions because people are not behind it and resist against such ideas. And if you encounter such a situation, it may be important to work on the acceptance, on the identification of the public for such issues. And in such cases, what we have to awaken first is the responsibility of ordinary citizens. That's the first ingredients, because we have to take them out of the consumer role and put them into the responsible role of a citizen. But this is not enough. The next step we have to do is to build trust, because this is the important ingredient that we are able to collaborate in a community. Because it's not enough to have engaged people, single people. We need to have good relationships amongst each other so we can collaborate. And this is all, again, not enough. We have to go one step further and develop a shared vision. This must not be very precise, but at least an idea of a common goal. And only if we achieve this, we are capable of putting solutions into practice. And this may be, this road may take longer, or seemingly take longer, but if you cannot go this way, it's the only way you can go. So to come to the end, I plea for a change in perception, how we perceive citizens. They are not consumers. They have to be citizens with responsibility. And actually, it's about a shift in political culture away from paternalizing. It's away from top-down politics to a way of cooperation. And the interesting thing is here, it's very difficult for a decision-maker, a political leader, to figure out what is needed here. And the more diverse a society, the more impossible this job is becoming. But if you work in this way with people, it doesn't matter. If you have diversity, you have to bring the diversity into the gatherings. And then this is a wonderful resource to work on better solutions. And we have to balance out these two approaches. Currently, we are in this, but we need more of this. And you know this discussion between, do we need more state or do we need more market? And I think this is not the right reduction. What we need is a strong civil society. This is what it's really about. If we want to improve life quality, if we want to secure life quality, we need primarily a strong civil society. So the benefits I already told you, I think this produces better solutions and higher acceptance and lower costs. But I also want to be honest, it doesn't work everywhere. The crucial question is the time already ripe for cooperation? For example, if you have political leaders who are not interested in such an approach, it is very, very difficult. Because when we started 15 years ago, we thought that the bottleneck are the citizens. What we have learned after 15 years of working in such a field is that the bottleneck are not the citizens. The bottleneck are the people in leading positions who have difficulties of letting go and letting self-organization taking over such processes. So our most important question is, are you ready for open-ended processes? Or is the outcome already defined and you make public participation just to get a better picture? And I want to close with a saying of one of the leading economists we had in Austria, Helmut Kramer, and he said, regional and municipal units are rather capable than the national state to support civil society, self-organization, and solidarity. So I think it's time that we stop waiting that somebody from the national government changes policies. We have to start ourselves, and we have to encourage citizens and people everywhere to make the step from consumers to active citizens. Thank you for your attention.